I'm leaving and hanging up here. Tourette's is the moniker of Dominic Hoey, who's a poet, MC, tutor, author of a new novel, Iceland. Next month, he'll be the one man in the one-man show, Your Heart Looks Like a Vagina, which is a show about the joys of chronic illness. To tell us more and to read at us. Tourette's.
Is this on? Oh, here I am. Hello. It's actually this month, 18 to the 22nd. But yeah, at the basement, you can come. I'll be there reading stuff, doing stuff. There's going to be records and drums. Those people are leaving. Where are they going with the toasters? Man. I stay for your shit. All right. I'm just teasing. I don't mind. All right. Poetry. Landlords, they suck. This poem's for them. It's called Dead Landlords Limited. Dear landlord, you know me. I'm a patron of the rich. I have supported your dreams. You praise me over champagne and Valium, or your boneless children lie empty in private schools. Dear landlord, black mold royalty, shaping the kingdom in your own image, a bloated mess, whitewashed and soulless, where the romantics wear pacemakers and the rich starve themselves for glory. And dear landlord, if you could hear the things that we say after drinking ourselves, dear, you would sleep as restless as a beneficiary on Mondays. When are you going to fix the broken windows in my heart? There's no longer commons for the commoners, even my thoughts trespass, and I feel guilty if I dream of anything but money. Dear landlord, today I sit at my laptop searching for tiny houses for my shrinking world, somewhere to stockpile books and baked beans where the phones don't sing and it's not a crime to be broken. And what will you do when the city is yours, only the ghosts of Auckland past to make your coffee and paint the walls of your empire? Dear landlord, when are you sending someone around to fumigate the feeling of desperation? It's got into the cracks in the floor and the rats in the wall are planning something. Is this what you thought you'd be when you grew up? Me neither. See, I always imagined that the numbers would stop adding up and that we would be dancing in the ruins of your dreams. Joke's on me, I guess. And I might be poor, but at least I know the difference between dumb luck and financial genius. Thank you. It's for the landlord just kicking me out of my flat. I just left stuff under the house that you didn't find. I'm pretty sure she doesn't listen to BFM. Might be wrong. If she does, that was a joke. All right. This one's called Treasure Maps, Love Letters and Ransom Notes. Oh, so I just got a little bit of a preamble, so
hold on.
Listeners, you can't see this, but this book here, I'm holding up a pink book, it's got drawings in it. Me and my friend Josh made this, and for Art Week last year, Josh was like, hey, do you want to read the book in the window of a shop and I'll tattoo the pictures on you and then people will come? And I was like, yeah, sweet, and I did, and then I wrote a poem about it. It's called Treasure Maps, Love Letters and Ransom Notes. Getting tattooed in a shop window reading poems for Art Week, words I wrote in the eye of a cyclone 4 years previous, the needle drumming my skin thinking, selfies in a car crash, dog bites and public sex, performing last Saturday to a handful of drunks who slipped through my fingers kicking worn souls at night shift guards, defeated I walk off stage, drink myself dumb, talk in circles to my words fall giddy and I sit in a taxi mute and alone. Getting tattooed in a shop window reading poems for Art Week, the city's breath stinks like toothpaste and booze. The rain's been spitting at the night for hours now and everyone stopped pretending they got somewhere important to be. Josh in a balaclava, me wearing the yellow shorts I brought in Manhattan for $10, my one extravagance. I wore them to the MoMA staring at all that priceless madness. Getting tattooed in a shop window reading poems for Art Week or Idiot Month or Dickhead Tuesday. One endless sigh drifting out my mouth like smoke. No piece of paper to certify my dreams. I just kept turning up until I learnt the words. I never wanted to confuse anyone, just make you feel the same as me for a few minutes. A complicated party trick like backflips or beatboxing something free that makes you exist. Getting tattooed in a shop window reading poems for Art Week, painting myself with my own blood to cure my invisibility sickness. I don't even know if I like art. It makes me feel poor and stupid. At school, we were taught to keep our voices quiet as our dreams, and then I met people who had worn the same smile their entire lives, and I realized some people have careers and educations, others clutch shopping lists of stupid mistakes, but we all end up at the same hospitals and parties. Yeah, so one-man show, Basement, Your Heart Looks Like a Vagina, is about how awesome it is having a chronic illness and the amazing things that you get to get up to, like going to a rheumatologist, get given tramadol, but then you have to take this other drug that gives you cancer, and it's all fun. Anyway, it's going to be a comedy. Should come along, 18th to 22nd. Cool, so I can't drive. I mean, I could, but someone would probably die. But recently I've been thinking about learning because I don't want to live in Auckland Central anymore and I'm tired of my girlfriend calling me a loser. So I went down to the AA office in town and I filled in a bunch of forms, which is never fun when you're dyslexic. And after about an hour of trying and failing to spell Sandringham, I took the bits of paper up to the woman at the front desk. "What are these for?" she asked suspiciously. "Oh, I need to get a license." "Oh, you don't need to fill out all these forms and you lose your license," she said, smiling. "No, I mean, I don't have any kind of license at all." "Aye," she said. She looked at the chicken scratchings I made in the bits of paper and sighed loudly. "What does this say then, Dominic? There's no S in Dominic." "No, it's a D." "Well, it looks like an S." "Well, it's not. I know to spell my own name." She put the paper down and stared at me as though I was getting out of line. She then motioned for me to stand in front of camera. "Take your hat off then. My hair was long and wild, my beard a matted rat's nest. I look a bit mad," I said, trying to lighten the mood. The woman looked at me but didn't say anything. Just then her phone rang and she turned her shoulder ever so slightly as if this would stop me from being able to hear a conversation. "Hello?" "Oh, hey, Sarah. Yeah, at work." "Oh, it's awful. There's some 39-year-old loser trying to get his learners. Yeah, looks like a fat-faced Charles Manson." "Yeah, all right, I'll meet you at the KFC after work." She hung up and turned back to face me. "It's $100 to take the test." "Really? I didn't know it was going to be that much." "Yeah, it's $100 or you have to fill all the forms out again." I handed over my card, which promptly declined. "You got any money?" she asked. "No, I don't think so." "Well then, Dominic," she said, "I'm afraid I can't help you." And I left and walked home to Sandringham. Don't live in Sandringham anymore though, because my landlord kicked me out. Woo! It's not that bad. I actually live in a really nice house now. I shouldn't complain. All right. Doing poetry on the... That's dead air, wasn't it? Sorry. I forget that there's other people listening. They can't see me on stage. I'm actually moving bits of paper now. It's really exciting. Okay, here we go. This is a poem for my dear mother. It's called Mother Says. Hopefully she doesn't listen to BFM either. All right. Mother says dog violence is the worst violence of all. Mother says if she had longer legs, she'd be taller. Mother has also been known to say things like, "Wouldn't the world be better if we just killed all the people?" On Christmas Day, Mother said the world's population should be reduced to 20,000. When we asked how she came up with that exact number, Mother said, "Leave me alone, you big bitch." Mother says she didn't break the chicken's neck, even though we all heard her saying she wished it would die the day before. Mother says all people worry about these days is buying rubbish they don't need, and this usually leads her to saying the world would be better if we just killed all the people. Once at family dinner, Mother said she'd rather her daughter lose a leg than an anonymous puppy die. It's not the good daughter, don't worry. Mother says she hates smart asses but loves fires. Mother says, "I don't know why you want to get up on stage and talk all that bullshit in front of strangers. Seems a bit stupid to me." Mother often says dogs are better than people. Mother says she thought having a kid would be just like having another dog. Mother says she doesn't have a favourite child, even though we all know it's me. Want to hear a poem about The Simpsons?
Yeah.
Cool, it's a rhetorical question, so I'm glad you agreed. Makes it look like we're working together here. Communism. All right, midlife crisis on a budget. The Simpsons plays over and over on a giant television. Every episode ever made, people's life's work rusting on a dusty hard drive. When it started, I was Bart's age. Now I'm a year older than Homer. For generations, the show always was like death or vicious rents. At 24, I used to wear a hat that read, "Life begins at 40. I'd say things like, "I don't know what I'm doing with my life." It was fucking hilarious. At 39, my job is to lose money and reduce everyone I've ever known to writing, make diamonds from their bones. This is all I ever wanted to be, and now it's too late to be anything else. Is that success? Most mornings, I swallow vitamins and stretch my hamstrings so I can live forever, but even cartoons don't get out alive. Lionel Hutz, murder-suicide. Lunch Lady Doris, emphysema. Edna Cabropel, breast cancer. But the seasons keep on rolling on without us. Living within the reruns, humming the theme tune, lost in my favourite episode, laughing at the same jokes ad infinitum. But if you don't question the narrative, life's back to normal at the start of every new day. Got some short poems here. One's actually new, so Sigrid wouldn't have heard it before because Sigrid saw these shitty poems heaps of times and I felt bad for her. sitting there selling merchandise, listening to the same dumb jokes. It weren't even funny the first time. What am I doing with my life? All right, here we go. In line at a cafe. Oh, my handwriting's terrible. In line at a cafe, the two women in front of me talking loudly. Their body language says there's been a tragedy. Sasha's boyfriend left her. She's 33 years old and all she's got is the house, one woman said. The other woman clasped her hands over her mouth. Oh my God, can you imagine being her age and having to start again with only a house in Mount Eden? They both shook their heads. Poor Sasha, I thought. This one's called Dogs. I can't find the dog's rash, but there's an ointment with his name on it, so there is a rash. Serious. All right. Some people can't work. They just can't. It makes them crazy, like caged tigers or killer whales that eat their trainers. I wonder if there's something wrong with them or something wrong with everyone else. And here's two political ones. This one's called Open Letter to the Labour Party. Stop being fucking cowards. And this one is an oldie but a goodie. It's called Ha Ha, You Voted for National and Now You're on the Dole. Ha Ha, You Voted for National and Now You're on the Dole, dickhead. All right. Do you want to hear a sexy poem or a poem about rap music?
Sexy.
All right. You can buy this too, it's there, it's $30, or you can buy my novel. The listeners, you can buy my novel too, it's in Unity Books and Time Out, and it's going to be number one on the bestsellers list if you all buy it, and then I'll be like really stoked, and my mum will say, you haven't wasted your life, and I'll say, I know, because I sold some books. Cool, alright, this one's called Untitled 2. Your milky skin spills over my sheets, I'm lost inside your smile, you come hard then go soft. I love mornings when we stink of night and grab at each other starving. Your mind is a river rushing day and night. Sometimes I'm caught in the current. Others I wait on the bank laughing as you babble. Lie next to me, rest your heart and liver. The night is false promise and our fathers are old men. Give me your pain. I'll keep it safe while you sleep. Don't let the past marry off your dreams. I don't know how sexy that was, but it's kind of a sexy vibe, you know. Who am I to say? All right, this one, the references in this one are a little bit dated because it's kind of old, but I hate fucking rugby, so I thought I'd do it anyway. So let's just pretend it's like 2016. Okay. So I've been thinking about getting castrated. Sorry, I should probably clarify. By castrated, I mean having my testicles removed. It's just like I'm almost 40 and I feel like I need to get my shit together. If I cut out masturbating alone, it's an extra 10 hours a week I could spend on my magnum opus, a Richie McCaw biopic entitled The Greatest New Zealander Ever. All right, picture this. Richie's flying a helicopter. Next to him is John Key, giggling like an excited schoolgirl, obviously drunk. Richie lands on the Christchurch rugby ground. The two men exit and walk over to meet the crowds, smiling inanely into the flashbulbs. A reporter raises a shaky hand. What do you want to do if you weren't going to be a rugby player? He asked the big lummox. Richie's dead eyes stare off into the distance. I did this in Golden Bay, and just no one laughed at all. Not in the way that you guys aren't laughing, where you're like, I've heard this before, and who cares about rugby? And I was like, what's up? Like, I don't think they're rugby fans, because they all had dreads, and it smelled like weed. And then afterwards, I was asking, they're like, nah, no one here knows who Richie McCaw is. It was like the best time that I've ever bombed. All right, and so we cut to Richie, 8 years old, in a farm in Oamaru, New Zealand's steampunk capital. Richie's chasing a sheep, a big dopey grin on his face. His father's watching on from a distance, shaking his head in disgust as his son frolics through the fields. We cut to Richie at 11 years old. He sits in front of a television watching the dog show barking at the screen. Dad bursts in and changes the channel. He sits down, All Blacks are playing. Dad sits down and opens a beer while a single tear rolls down Richie's face. Now Richie's 13, the same awful Fearless song has been playing this whole time, by the way. Richie's at rugby practice, stomping on the head of a much smaller player. Dad's there on the sidelines, cheering and screaming, drunk on cheap piss and prepubescent violence. But that night, things take a turn for the worse. Let me set the scene. Interior, night, the McCall living room, the smell of disappointment hangs thick in the air. But Dad, I want to be a farmer, Richie says, stomping his foot. I don't think so, shit for brains, his dad says. It's rugby, you can get a job in the freezing works. You don't understand me, Richie yells, bursting to tears and storming out. And then there's some teenage scenes like maybe Richie wanking in a field or something. Before we know it, he's off to university to study agricultural science, which is like a $10 word for farming. Cue lots of drinking and weird shit that students get up to in Dunedin. Richie really knuckles down and achieves a C average. It seems like everything's on track. And then Dad forces out to drop out and join the All Blacks. Richie is devastated. From this point on, the film's basically all mud, rugby, men in shorts, Richie looking teary-eyed at photos of farming equipment. I kind of lost interest around this point, to be honest. Anyway, there'll be some kind of character arc, maybe a love interest, a close game which the All Blacks end up winning because no other country in the world gives a fuck about rugby. In the third act, Richie retires and buys a lifestyle block. In the final scene, he's out building a fence with Dan Carter, both men having a great time, sinking piss and making slightly misogynistic jokes. Suddenly, Richie's phone rings. It's John. The two small talk for a bit, and then the Prime Minister drops a bombshell. See, that's the bit where you have to imagine that we're back in time. Hey, Richie, I'd like to offer you a knighthood for being good fucking good at rugby, the Prime Minister says. Richie leans on a fence post. His little rat eyes stare out from behind his sunken forehead as he gazes across the acres of fields. I'm no knight, John, I'm just a simple farmer, Richie says, cracking open a fresh can of Lion Red. 660 fade in, doing a reggae version of National Anthem. The camera pulls out, and the two men go back to building the fence, laughing at good fortune's the end. And obviously there's going to be heaps of work, and if any hope of doing Richie's great legacy justice, I'm just going to have to get castrated. How am I doing for time? Not dead air, not dead air, not dead air. 5 minutes, all right. It's heaps of time. Buy my novel, come to my play, 18th to 22nd. All right, moving on. All right, let's do this one. So normally I do this in a bar and I'm holding a beer and then I drink the beer, but we'll just pretend that we're in a bar and we have beers. All right. I'd like to make a toast to the sound man for making me louder than my detractors, to the bartenders, those unsung heroes of hospo serving up sweet amnesia, to the hecklers, the physical manifestations of the voices in my head, shut the fuck up, to the people out feeding and cleaning the city for 15 an hour, dreaming of their 15 minutes, to the solo parents who get babysitters and pay to listen to me make origami flowers for my hang-ups and public secrets, to the disabled and chronically ill who have to swallow a bottle of pills just to face the day with a sexy grimace, to the activists sacrificing safety and sanity, throwing themselves beneath the wheels, to the men and women spending tonight in a locked doorway, to the musicians, artists, photographers, dancers, money's bastard children filling the short life with beautiful disasters, to the person on the door having explained the basic principles of capitalism, to drunk dickheads who think that what I do is worth less than the beer they just pissed all over themselves, to the poets in the audience muttering, this isn't fucking poetry. I invite you to come do my writing course. I'm doing one in September. Hit me up if you want to come do it. To anyone who refused a victim moniker and seized the day by its fucking throat. To everyone who's lost within the justice system, the healthcare system, the welfare system, 1,000 different forms and appointments just to get a little help and assistance. To all those with a mind they can't trust and a heart that don't sing, this drink's for you, cheers. And then I drink the beer and I throw it away really dramatically and everyone's like, woo! Don't do that one anymore. I forgot it. I'm sorry. I forgot how to do it. I don't really. Forgive me. Huh? Sorry. Alrighty. I don't know which one to do. I guess I could do this one. It's not very funny though. It's kind of. No, I'll do this other one. Do you want to hear one?
Alright.
Do you want to hear one about rapping, or do you want to hear one about growing up in this shitty suburb that we're standing in right now? This has been easy. Normally when I say this, everyone's just like, ah, and you can't hear what anyone's saying. And I'm like, why do I ever do this? But I always do. What's that? Thank you. All right. It's like my internal dialogue. How does it start? There was a childhood once, mine and yours. Did we know each other then? Were we watching the same film in different houses? Do you remember dented tin toys, ant-infested refresh packets, jumped-up dogs, G.I. Joe puppet shows, Run-DMC cassettes, days haunted by VHS horrors? Stale cigarettes, Sundays, sucker-punching, sleep to stay up and watch the young ones, family trips to Blood Beach, Dead Tree Streets, macaroni, cheese, the company smell of cheap weed, rap parties in the crawl space, roaches on the night shift, doing the bop, boys down, barter bullets, bird calls on the radio, nuclear-free Vogel's bread, ghosts and goblins, double dragons, scabbing 20s, drinking Fanta in front of a black-and-white television, bad reception, no reception. Changed the fucking channel, the early 90s. Said that I'm number 22 Firth Road, holding an erection and a bottle of Pushkin vodka with a Datura mixer. Discman skipping, playing Nas and My Bloody Valentine. Old school, like meetings at Metro. Spray paint nights, days getting chased. Hydro and Hydra. Spitting freestyles in a kitchen. Standing in circles, flicking matches that danced across the line. Oh, what's next? Burrows and Bukowski, Bahamas 62 holidays, vegan burgers, meters, murder, eating worse than ever and getting scurvy, drunk at punk gigs, beating on busted drum kits, I knew it all, beer bottle wisdom, monkey mind religion, Windows 95, shitty skate shoes, baggy jeans, sleeping in vans, holding hands, kissing and fucking like it's the first time, was the first time, slow dive, no time to think. 4XL t-shirts and starter caps, trying to rap over that dub of a dub hiss of Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to fuck with. Shoplifting and falling in love with going crazy. Falling asleep on the floor of Lola's basement. Waking up in amazement at the possibilities of every new day. Wasted them all, chasing a dream I can't even remember having. So there was a childhood and a soap opera about a circus that played day and night and a village that fell into the sea. I feel like maybe I met you there. Thank you very much.